Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, even to Massachusetts now and out to Phoenix, Arizona. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your next home financing experience. No matter what is going on in the market, you'll want to know what the best deal is, and it's available only through Hunt Mortgage. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And we're going to talk about why that's so important today a little later in the show. So call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700 to personalize, customize what we like to call knock your socks off service. And check out that low rate guarantee. Certain restrictions do apply, and you can find them all at huntmortgage.com, but please check it out because it is an important step to make sure that you're getting the lowest rates and closing costs for your home financing experience. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale all across upstate, but particularly here in Buffalo, Niagara, at 631-4800. All you have to do is enter the street number after you dial that 631-4800 number, just the street number of the house, and the system will prompt you with a choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that particular property, all automatically and just that fast, anytime in any market we serve, on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's. I encourage you to do that today because it doesn't matter whose listing it is. If you see a house that has a sign in front of it and you drive by a little too fast to check it all out, just call 631-4800 and we'll give you all the information, no strings attached. This is a very important time in the market, and that's what we're here to talk about today, because if you're considering buying or selling a home, or even if you're owning a home and you want to do something to it and you're considering refinancing, you'll want to know what's going on in the home financing world today. And there's no better person to discuss that in the whole market, as far as I'm concerned, than Linda Malaya, the president of Hunt Mortgage. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Peter.
It's good to have you with us this morning.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
As you know, I follow the financial news almost as sharply as you do. I would say almost, probably not nearly as close. But there's been a lot of news lately, going back now probably a year and a half, when the Fed first started talking about raising interest rates. Maybe it was farther than that. And there's a couple of reasons why they were wanting to do this. As they saw the economy getting better and better,
right,
and there was no inflation, it was a kind of an odd set of circumstances. So they started to put the word out that maybe they would be raising rates so that they would give themselves some wiggle room in the event that inflation did strike and they could dampen inflation a little bit. But also, if things got bad again, that they'd have a little room to go to lower rates,
right,
to stimulate the economy again.
Yeah, they'd fired all their bullets, so they needed to put one back in the chamber just in case. Absolutely.
And they had all kinds of examples around the world where countries had gotten themselves in real trouble, like Japan.
Right. They had 10 years of...
Even Western Europe, parts of certain countries in Western Europe, and then the EU and everything that's been going on there. So just walk us through what happened from the mortgage perspective. Because the mortgage market, if I'm correct, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, the mortgage market has to anticipate that kind of thing well in advance, or at least they seem to, because they're always looking forward just because of the timing of a mortgage.
Right. That's definitely true. As the Fed began to signal that they were raising rates, nobody wanted to be the last one, you know, at the dance. So everybody kind of started scrambling to increase rates. And I think that because rates had been so low, there were so many signals they were going to raise rates, that there might have even been a bit of an overreaction, kind of a lurching upward. We've then, since an initial jump up in rates, we've seen some, I don't know what word to use, modifications. You know, they go up, they go down, they go up, they go down. It hasn't been, I guess what I'm trying to spit out is it hasn't been just an upward trajectory as I kind of thought it would be.
Take us back to the lowest rate. What was the lowest point in, the, in a 30-year fixed mortgage product, the one that most people listening might be familiar with?
I think rates got as low as the mid threes on a 30-year fixed rate, maybe 3.5. So if you've got that rate, you know, you happen to be the one that got the lowest rate ever.
If I had a 15-year, it would have been a little lower.
Yeah, I think they actually got into the twos. Mm-hmm. Not for long.
And there was a period of time, particularly post-recession, when people were thinking more in terms of building equity because they didn't want to get torched again if values...
Yeah, you know, and I assume you're talking post the most recent recession.
I'm talking 2010,
okay, that's
10,
what
11,
I thought
12.
You meant. Because I can't believe what I'm seeing right now. I mean, prices are rising all over the country.
Let's exclude real estate prices for just a second.
Okay.
Let's go back to the mortgage. I just want to understand, and we're listening to understand, how low it got and where it is today.
Okay. Today it is, rates are hovering around 5, a little below 5%. So they're still quite attractive. I mean, I know you and I have talked many times about how we bought houses in the 80s. You know, my rate was 15. I think you beat me.
Oh, yes. I had a 17% mortgage.
Thank you.
Briefly.
You know what? I'm always happy to have people beat me at certain things.
I refinanced that.
I'm very competitive.
I refinanced that 9 times.
Did you really?
On the way,
you beat
on the
me
way
on
down.
That one, too.
nine times in 10 years. But I had to try to anticipate the downward trend, too, and
right.
Didn't want to get stuck with
well,
it.
Well, you know, that's another thing that I think about all the time now is, you know, the only thing that Hunt Mortgage does is mortgages. We don't take in savings accounts. We don't give out CDs other than closing disclosures. And so that opportunity to refinance our customers is not going to be here for many years. Many, many years.
Let's talk about that because that's an important point. This week, for the first time in a long time, they announced a severe decline in refinances across the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, severe.
Yeah.
Month over month and year over year.
Yes.
So it was a significant whammo going mm-hmm. the wrong way.
Yeah.
And the rationale they gave was that a lot of people already had refinanced, so the demand was low.
Right.
But beyond that, because the rates had come up, people didn't want to refinance.
Right.
Their entire mortgage,
right,
based upon a rate that might come down again. And sure enough, rates did come down a little bit this week.
A little bit, right. No, if you have a 3-4% rate, you're not going to refinance into a 5% rate. So as rates are going up, it just kind of makes sense that refis are going to die off. And also, as you said, demand. I mean, I used to joke when rates were as low as they were in the threes, I would joke that the only people that haven't refinanced are living under a rock or in prison because everybody else had refinanced.
Mm-hmm.
It was insane if you hadn't.
Well, there were years when refinances, I know one of the
right.
local, not so local banks told me that in 1 year, I believe it was 2012 or 13, 80% of their business was refinances.
Right.
80%
right.
of their mortgage business.
Right.
And it was the most profitable piece of the bank.
Yeah, I can imagine.
By a long shot.
Yep. As obviously we're owned by Hunt Real Estate, so our business is purchase. We've never been anywhere near that high. The high water mark for us was 30 or 35% refinancing. But even still, when you look at, you know, a normal year for us and then add 30% more business on, that's a pretty robust year. So that business is gone. And obviously we then have to, you know, find other ways to get our share of the pie, if you will, because the pie in Western New York is rather finite. It's not, you know, it's a good market, but it's not just on the crazy upward trajectory that say California is.
I think you know about my feeling about the share of the pie. In every market, there's only so many transactions.
Exactly.
Period. And there's only going to be so many mortgages. And if you take out the refinancing piece of the market, it makes the pie even smaller. So our fair share, in my mind, is how aggressively we compete for all the pie, really.
Right.
And that's why we offer the programs we do.
Right.
But beyond that, the other interesting thing that came out this week was that home equity lines of credit, there was a spike in interest in those. Now, why is that? Here's my explanation. I like yours. if people have that 3 or 3.5% rate like you described, why would they jeopardize that by refinancing the whole mortgage when if they've got some equity, they could borrow easily against that for a home, with a home equity line of credit?
Right. Exactly. I think that is the case. Well, home equity lines of credit are also tied to various things. Like I just got my letter in the mail from my home equity line. I don't use it, but I have it there in case of emergencies. And I got a notice that the rate went from something low in the twos to it's now five something.
Right.
And I felt like calling up the bank and going, how come I'm only getting a quarter of 1% on my savings account? When are you going to be raising that rate? It's amazing how those rates go up before the savings rates go up. But yeah, I mean, home equity lines of credit have their place. There are times where it makes sense to refinance your home mortgage. There are more times where it doesn't. As a matter of fact, I was in a meeting with the CFPB, which is the entity that regulates all mortgage bankers, and that gentleman had gone in to refinance his to get a home equity line of credit, and the lender said to him, well, maybe you should think about refinancing the home mortgage. He was so incensed. He lectured us, how dare you people do that? This is why we regulate you. But, you know, I raised my hand and I said, but you have to ask that question and look at the whole package. You can't just look at somebody without knowing what their first rate is. Home equity lines of credit are generally not fixed rate. And if you believe, you know, you have to give people all those options. But it was very interesting to me how the CFPB perceived that. They perceive that if a consumer wants to refinance, they should look at home equities first. I don't agree with that.
Well, this is classic. If you look at the CFPB, they just announced yesterday, I believe, that there's a new head of the CFPB appointed. Mm-hmm. And simultaneously, seemingly, the lawsuit filed by the assistant director of the CFPB, who claimed that she should have been the director before the president appointed Mulvaney, I believe, to be head of that interim while they found a chairman. Apparently, this all happened just yesterday,
yep.
which was very interesting. Let's go. But creation of the CFPB, though, which is the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, was a first for this country.
Yes,
it was an absolute first because it's a totally unsupervised entity. If I'm correct,
unsupervised and unwieldy.
Can do what it basically interprets the Dodd-Frank bill.
Yes,
as it feels like interpreting it.
Yes, yes.
And writes the regulations for. Didn't they write the regulations for the entire bill, or is that someplace else?
Because I'm not sure about that.
Because there's 2,500 pages of the bill itself, and then another 10 times that in terms of regulatory interpretation of that bill. So there's 25,000 pages of something out there someplace.
Well, it's interesting, too, because the Supreme Court kind of smacked the CFPB down a bit. Because the head of the CFPB was appointed by the president, and there was nothing in there that said that he or she could be removed.
Right.
I mean, think about that in a democracy. It blows your mind. And I'm also amazed that, you know, the Obama administration didn't think of that. I mean, President Obama was an attorney by training. I don't get it, but, you know, I don't know. We didn't sit in on those meetings. So they did smack the CFPB down a bit and to control their power. I believe they forced Congress to put something in there about the removal, you know, the potential removal, and they felt that then brought it back into
some supervisory position.
Yes, but yes.
Supervised.
Some constitutionality to it then, because there was some argument it was unconstitutional. And you know, I read a little bit about it. I'm not a lawyer. Don't even play one on TV. But it seemed like a very 101 elementary argument that, yeah, if the person can't be removed, how could that possibly be constitutional? So
I suppose the thought might be that judges are appointed effectively for life, and maybe they were trying to create.
Yeah, but justices can be removed.
But follow me just for a second here. That this was to be a completely independent body.
Understood.
Kind of a fourth branch of government, if you will.
Yeah, right.
Which is also unconstitutional.
Exactly. I mean, we've had three branches for 200 plus years, and I mean. The whole thing, the expense of it is staggering. If you want just a concept of how expensive it is, just go onto the CFPB's website and look at the jobs that they have. I mean, there's zillions of jobs at really good pay with really good government benefits that you and I are paying for, and the CFPB has done very little. Mm-hmm. They have done some regulatory things against, say, Wells Fargo that clearly deserved it. I mean, mm-hmm. Wells Fargo's behavior has been very poor. And they deserved it. But other than that, I can't see where they've done anything that has justified that cost.
Not to mention the fact that they've increased the regulatory burden, even if they did nothing, by simply issuing the regulations.
Right.
And the various measurements that they use to validate or not validate a bank's behavior, mm-hmm. any lender's behavior. It's the burden that is placed on banks and thus the cost that is pushed to the consumer in some way, shape, or form. Like you were saying, the bank's only paying you a smidgen while they're asking for a lot. That smidgen is representative, in my mind, of in part the regulatory costs.
There's no question.
That are, for example, one banker told me that his square footage allocated to just regulatory compliance went from 50,000 square feet to 500,000 square feet.
Oh my God!
In the post Dodd-Frank era,
yeah,
or in the Dodd-Frank era, I should say. But I'm not going to beat up on them all day.
Okay. Who do we want to beat up on?
we could beat up on lots of people. But let's
pick a few we don't like.
Let's just go back to that meeting that you had with the CFPB, because I think it's important that our listeners understand that. This is a regulated business, a highly regulated business. And there are safeguards built into the system that we have to comply with, that every lender has to comply with. What was the upshot besides this one example that you cited?
You know, to be perfectly candid with you, Peter, I walked out of that meeting and I said to my friends in the room, I'm done with these. I've now gone to this meeting 3 years in a row. We kind of tell the CFPB what we are dealing with and what costs are, you know, put on the consumer. There doesn't seem to be any change. So I can't really report to you that there was anything terribly good that came out of that meeting. I think the only good that might come out of that meeting is if you go to them and you're looking them in the eye and you get to know these people, that if you are audited or whatever, they know you're a good egg.
Is this someone from Washington coming to Buffalo?
Yes.
Yes. We have a caller online. This is Gustav from Williamsville. Gustav, how can we help you?
Hi, good morning. I'm just wondering what is the time horizons for comparable sales with respect to appraisals when the banks are financing a property? Is that a regulatory
yes.
thing or discretionary, or what is it?
That's a very interesting
That's a
question.
Good question. The Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who are the two entities that buy most of the mortgages in the United States, will not buy a mortgage if you use a comparable sale over 1 year old. If a lender is portfolioing the product, they can, in their discretion, go older than that, but most banks won't. And the reason is very simple. People tend to think of real estate as doing nothing but appreciating. We all know from several years ago that sometimes real estate can come down in value. And so if you're using something older than 1 year, are you getting a current picture of the market? The theory mm-hmm. is that something that's 1 year old or less really gives you a true picture of what something is selling for in a neighborhood. You're really supposed to use 6 months, but they do recognize that, you know, there's not always sales. The other thing that appraisers are required to look at is, I think they call it natural boundaries. So in other words, if you are doing an appraisal and the 90 cuts through, let's say, and you're on the east side of the 90 and somebody's on the west side of the 90, you're supposed to stay on the east side where the neighborhood is. You're supposed to stay within 1 mile. You are supposed to use comps that are similar in style and square footage, so a colonial to a colonial, two-story to a two-story. So it becomes problematic when you are selling something that is unique. Particularly, the most common thing we run into is one- or two-bedroom homes. because you're supposed to compare them to one or two bedroom homes. There are not a lot of them. You're supposed to find three comparable sales. Generally, we will go with it if we can find one strong comp. So in other words, one other one-bedroom home, and then we'll look at some two-bedroom homes, something like that. But it becomes very problematic, and log homes are really the most difficult.
That brings up a bunch of questions, which I'd like to ask you after we get back, because I think the appraisal issue is still a hot issue, and it's always going to be a hot issue, because by nature an appraisal is historic.
Yes.
And they're trying to take history and predict what's going to happen in the future.
Right.
For the security of the bank.
Right.
Involved, the lender involved.
But also tell you you're not supposed to project. You're supposed to use history, but you're not supposed to guess what happens, you know, to the upside.
And then there's the issue of multiple offers that kind of confuse the nature of values.
Yes.
And the widespread use of algorithms like Zillow's that the consumer has at their fingertips, so that they come in with their own ideas long before anything like a purchase offer or a acceptance or even a house goes on the market.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of information out there, and we'll be right back with more from Our House to Yours after these important messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. When it comes to the single biggest purchase of your life, it pays to shop around. If you think you found the best rate available for your home loan, why not let us take a second look? We'll review your rates and your terms and try to see if we can do better. And just for giving us a shot, we'll give you a $50 gift card.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and soon to be Boston, Massachusetts. You'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. And for more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before and live the after, which is something that's very important in a community like ours, call 633-3700 and ask for details. Ask about our pre-purchase commitment and even our warm home loan as well, only at Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And for those of you who would prefer to simply pick up the phone and call to ask any question about real estate, call the Hunt Customer Service Center, the only one of its kind in North America, 716-633-9400. One of our customer service reps will either answer your call right there, your question, or instantly direct you to the appropriate professional for your particular needs, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring your home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. There's no stronger guarantee in the real estate world today. That's a seller security plan available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. Hunt Real Estate is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. We also support the Bisons, and I would strongly encourage you to watch what's going on with all those teams. It's very interesting right now, and hopefully the seasons ahead will be more, let's say, winning than the ones we've seen in the past few years. I'm in the studio today with Linda Malaya. Linda is the president of Hunt Mortgage, and we've been talking about a wide range of topics relative to the mortgage business, including the interest rates today, which were trending upward, and correct me when I get off track here, Linda, but have come down in the recent week. I say week because it's just been a week since we've seen a little tick downward, that there's been a strong movement away from refinancing, a movement towards home equity lines of credit, mainly because many banks are offering teaser rates.
Right.
Locked for a year or two or something like that, and you found out the hard way what happens after that period of time. And I think and also they're waiving fees in many cases so that you can effectively get at your equity. That begs a question, though. And this is something, whether you're refinancing, buying a house, or getting a home equity line. What? There was a long period of time there when the Dodd-Frank bill first was passed and we're coming out of recession where lenders were requiring, by law, a much larger down payment unless you were getting government-insured loan. Where does that stand today? What is the down payment level? What? How does that lower down payment affect interest rates? Because this is a murky topic out there that seems to be changing.
You know, it's really interesting because I watch the same financial network that you do, except the difference is I'm drinking coffee while I'm watching it and you're doing the elliptical.
Not the elliptical. I'm doing something else, workout-wise.
Right.
I gave up
which
on this.
Which is so. Why if we were on TV, people would see the difference.
Exactly.
So the commentator was saying the other day, you have to have 20% down. And I'm like, no, you don't. You never have had to have 20% down, even at the height of the crisis. FHA lending was always, well, not always, but it's been 3.5% since I got into the business 30 years ago. I can't speak to what it was in the 1930s. And so there's always been mortgages that you could get with a low down payment. Now, Bank of America... Jamie Dimon got into a, can I say, urinating contest? Can I say that? Jerry in the booth, his head popped up when I said, can I say? He got nervous there. He's shaking. I'm not going to use any real bad language. But he got into a...
Smile on his face.
Yeah. He got into a urinating contest with the government over some stuff. And he came out with, Bank of America was the first to come out with kind of their own version of the FHA program. They have a 3% down. I've even seen some zero down programs coming back.
Let's walk our listeners through that. If I put 3% down, what else am I paying for?
Closing costs, which in Western New York run about 3% of your loan amount.
So at minimum, I've got to have 6% for this deal.
Yeah, something minimum.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. Now you can.
That's a tax escrow too. Would that be included in 3%? Or in addition to the 6%?
That'd be in addition to. So your taxes in Western New York and insurance would be another 3%. So essentially you need at least, I always tell people 10% just to have a cushion in there is kind of the minimum that you would need to mm-hmm. buy a house. But you can go to a seller and say, I want to offer you, your home is, I think, worth about $100,000 to $105,000. I'll offer you $103,000, but I need $3,000 back from you to pay part of my closing costs, called the seller concession. And that's done all day long. And that reduces the borrower's need for cash.
You know, this is an interesting thing. You and I can both remember when those things didn't exist, seller's concessions.
Right.
That the price you paid was the price you paid.
Right.
And going back to the appraisal question, How do seller's concessions then affect an appraiser's look at a piece of real estate?
They do. Particularly
when there's multiple offers.
Yeah. You know, they do take it into account. My question is, and I've never really had an appraiser clearly give me an answer.
It's not real value.
I couldn't agree more. It isn't. The appraisers tell me that they verify whether there were or there were not seller concessions, so that when they are looking at a three-bedroom ranch in Cheektowaga, that sold for, let's say, $100,000, and they're comparing it to the neighbors next door that sold for $106,000, they call the realtors and say, were there seller concessions? Realtor says, yes, there was a 6% seller concession, meaning then that was $100,000. And they take that into account then on the appraisal so that they are not inflating the sale price of homes by those seller concessions. My concern is those seller concessions are not public record. They are going on the basis of what the realtors are telling them. And I'm not suggesting that any realtor is not telling the truth. But sometimes, as you know, when they're busy, you can't get hold of them.
Or they simply say it's confidential. That's
right.
All I have to say.
Or they forget. Yeah.
And what about the issue of talking to agents? Wasn't there some kibosh put on that, too, by the CFPB?
Well,
when an appraiser can't call an agent or could? Can they or can't they?
They can't to discuss a transaction the realtor is currently involved in. In other words, if the realtor has sold 5400 Broadway Street, that realtor and that appraiser cannot talk about that transaction. However, if that realtor sold across the street 6300 Broadway and the appraiser wants to know if there was a seller concession on that, he can talk about historical transactions.
Really? So what's the difference?
I don't know.
I'm just curious because it seems to me that that's just a game.
It's a shell game in a sense, yeah.
And so let's talk about the seller's concessions are obviously one way to mitigate the down payment. Beyond that, I need the 10%, and I can offset some of that through a seller's concession. What else, what other what other costs are involved in that mortgage? Because isn't there private mortgage insurance if we do go above 80% on any loan?
There is, but that is either financed into the loan amount or it's paid monthly. So it's not, you can pay some of it at closing if you opt for that, and it could increase your closing costs.
What about the interest rate itself?
If you finance it into the loan amount, it doesn't affect the interest rate. Well, it does in the sense that you're paying for it. So the lender will generally raise the rate, take the excess money that the lender makes off of that higher rate, and use it to pay your mortgage insurance for you. So it lender-paid mortgage insurance is a oxymoron because it's really consumer paid. Anything you do is consumer paid. I mean, anything.
Right. Exactly. Or in one way, shape, or form.
Right.
So government wants to do good through a law like Dodd-Frank and the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. And effectively, somebody needs to be paid to do all those things, the enforcement of it. And somebody's got to get the money someplace.
You know, Peter, it's really interesting because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac also have this very bizarre thing that they do called loan level price adjustments, where they charge lenders for various credit scores, various down payments. And if you are putting 20% down, your rate, depending upon your credit score, if you and I were both going to buy a house, you were putting 15% down, I was putting 20% down, and we both had not something less than fabulous credit scores, you're going to get a better interest rate than I am, but you have to have mortgage insurance. I'll get a higher rate, but no mortgage insurance, which is why it's so important to have a professional mortgage consultant look at your situation, because it is counterintuitive that you're going to do better putting 15% down and taking mortgage insurance, but it's a possibility. It depends on your credit score. It depends on your unique set of circumstances. You really need to take the time to go through every possible gyration. There are, you know, I really jump up and scream at the TV when I see commercials come on for that company. Jerry, can I name a name?
No, you can't.
Okay, there you go. But it rhymes with Lickin'. And they have celebrities on, and these celebrities say, oh, you know, there's all this, verbiage in the mortgage business and acronyms and that, and just press this button and you'll get a mortgage. And what you get when you call them is you get somebody with a headset on that it sits in a factory-like setting, probably in Detroit, where they're founded and headquartered.
Or Phoenix.
Yeah, they also have a hub in Phoenix. And those people, they don't know that. Yes, they can take your mortgage application. Absolutely. And will it close? Probably. I mean, they're not a bad company by any. But you don't get a professional that could say to you, well, let's look at this with 15% down. Let's look at this with mortgage insurance. Let's look at without mortgage insurance. Your credit score is 10 points away from getting a better rate. What if you did this, this, and this? We think you can get your credit score up. There's just all kinds of things that you can do. And the mortgage is the largest financial transaction of your life. Why would you not spend an hour with somebody to discuss that?
Let's face the fact, that's a good marketing gimmick.
Oh, it's a wonderful marketing. Their commercials are wonderful.
And they're investing heavily.
Again, yes, they are.
Somebody needs to pay for that.
Somebody's paying for that celebrity, no question.
But it's the consumer, just like you were saying.
No question.
We don't do that kind of thing. We just simply say we'll get you the best rate and closing costs.
Right.
And we'll also help you to know well in advance of the purchase what you're in for by way of a pre-purchase commitment, which I'm, in my mind, I don't care what you're doing. That's the best deal in town.
Yep.
And we'll be right back with more from our house. Here's these important messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. When it comes to the single biggest purchase of your life, it pays to shop around. If you think you've found the best rate available for your home loan, why not let us take a second look? We'll review your rates and your terms and try to see if we can do better. And just for giving us a shot, we'll give you a $50 gift card.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. And right before the break, Linda Millay, the president of Hunt Mortgage, who's here in the studio with me, was talking about the concept of a mortgage consultant. We're going to delve into that just for a second after when we come back here. But we encourage you to call one of our mortgage consultants today for all the reasons Linda's been talking about, some more that we're going to talk about in a moment, 633-3700. And Hunt Mortgage is the other sponsor of this show. Linda, before the break, you were talking about the consultative nature of applying for a mortgage as opposed to just an algorithm or something that you could do on your phone, which is entirely possible. You could do the same thing for a consumer, could you not? Fundamentally, if they called up, you could give them with 1,000 things, if, ands, or buts, you could give them a quote commitment.
Right.
I mean, like this other company is claiming, right?
Right. You know, we have, if someone is interested in applying for a mortgage, I check out our website at huntmortgage.com. We have an incredibly sophisticated website with an incredibly sophisticated online application. You can apply online. You can put in your passcodes and allow us to talk to your employer, essentially. They have to participate in this thing. Most large employers do, and we can verify your employment without bugging you or bugging anybody. And we can also, if you're using the major tax preparers, TurboTax, and I forget the other ones, we can access your tax return without your lifting a finger, and we can also verify your bank accounts without you lifting a finger. It is incredibly sophisticated and incredibly fast. But the difference between us and another online provider is that we will actually then look at all of that and we'll have a consultation with you. If you don't want to, I suppose you don't have to, but we highly advise it. Whereas if you're dealing with some of these large national players, as I said, you're dealing with kids with headsets on that are, not making a whole lot of money. Because they're not a whole lot of skill. They're filling in blanks, and you don't need a professional to fill in blanks. What you need is a professional, again, to look at, your entire portfolio. I mean, let's take Diane Sovereign. She is our leading mortgage consultant. She recently closed her $1 billionth of $1 billion.
Wow, that's amazing.
Okay.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's
$1 billion. Tremendous. And so do you think she might, know a few things about mortgage banking? Sort of think so. So do you want to deal with a kid with a headset on in a factory in Detroit, or do you want to talk to Diane Sovereign? I don't know.
It's an interesting thing because I think part of the attractiveness is the anonymity of this, this thing. Just, let me just see what would come back to me.
I agree.
And I think that's very attractive to a lot of people. Whereas our pre-purchase commitment, for example, there's no cost or risk.
None.
And they can find out not just, they'll get that consultative experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So I agree with you. You know, Peter, I think that our industry, and I use the royal R, which is real estate and mortgage banking, has a bit of a reputation of being aggressive towards consumers. And so I think they are very shy. I mean, we even noticed that at Hunt Mortgage, we have a higher than normal no-show for job interviews. And I don't know, one day I said to myself, why is this? What is going on? And I think that people think we're going to Shanghai them, that we're, that they just have this reputation of, I don't want to talk to those people. They're aggressive, which we are not aggressive. Yes, we'll call you and ask you, hey, you applied for a pre-purchase commitment. Have you found a home yet? Let us know what's going on. But, with caller ID and everything, you can avoid us if you really want to anyway. Trust me, my friends avoid me.
Well,
you can, too.
I think everybody gets avoided today.
Exactly.
And avoid others, too, I might add. And this is the way of the world right now. And with robocalls to everybody from everything, I mean, it's amazing how sophisticated they are. They know the prefix of our phone numbers for our cell phones in our company. And so I'll see the number come up, and I think it's somebody inside our company, and it's somebody in East Bejesus who's trying to upgrade, a warranty program or something that I don't want to upgrade. But let
I got a call from the IRS yesterday saying that...
That you owed them money? Yes,
if I didn't pay, they were coming to arrest me. So I called them back and I said, I'll meet you in the parking lot. 3 square meals a day and I don't have to do laundry. I don't know, I'm in. Good.
And no more phone calls. There you go. What a life. Let's go back to something you mentioned about credit scores. I know if there's something that I think is on people's minds that seems to come up to me often when I'm talking to people, is their concern over credit scores. Because everywhere you turn, and there's some advertisement either online when you open up a news feed or something, free credits scores and free this and free that. And so people do it, and then they find out what their credit score is, and they get all nutsy. What's really behind all this, and what's a good one, what's a bad one?
Well, credit scores are different for different industries. You know, Peter, this is the hardest thing to explain to consumers, because even as I explain it, I go, it doesn't sound believable, but it is what it is. The auto industry has one set of criteria. So today, if I went out to apply for a mortgage and buy a car, and both run my credit report, it would come up with different credit scores. So you can't use one score to judge another. Then there are websites, and I think it's freecreditreport.com or annualcreditreport.com, something like that, where you can go on and you can once a year, because the government mandates it, you can get a free credit report. I think it's a good idea to do. And that gives you a fairly good idea, but our scores in the mortgage industry will still be off of those scores. But it gives you a good idea of what your credit score would be. And your interest rate varies greatly based on your credit score.
Elaborate on that. What is the variance, and what's the cutoff where you're just not going to get a mortgage? I mean, not to give me a number, but I mean...
There is a number.
There's gradations here, so...
Yes. There's numbers. If you are below 620 and above, you're going to get a mortgage. Below 620, you get into some gray area. There are some lenders that will loan and some that won't. Once you drop below 600, even more lenders drop out and say, no, I don't want to lend. 550, I think, is the absolute lowest I've ever seen anybody go. Maybe there are some out there at 500. And the problem with that is lenders will say, okay, we'll do a 550 credit score, but there have to be compensating factors. And there rarely is compensating factors. If you have a 550 credit score, probably something fairly dire has gone on. I will say that if it's medical, most lenders, including us, pretty much don't even look at medical. We say, that's different. That's not something you can control. And almost all of us look at your current housing. How do you pay your landlord? And how are you paying your mortgage? And if it's your landlord, we have to see it verified, because sometimes when people don't pay, landlords go, yeah, they're great payers. Go ahead, lend them a mortgage. Get them out of here. So we have to see verification of it.
So if I'm thinking about this, what then will be the impact on my rate as I go up or down that scale, starting, let's say, at 625, you're going to get a mortgage. Am I going to pay more at 625 than I'm going to pay at 800?
You're going to pay much more at 625 than you do at 800.
How does that work? How does the gradation work?
Well, it also gets broken down even further in that somebody with an 800 credit score is not likely to want to go FHA unless they also are lacking the down payment.
Right. So a young person, for example.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. You could have a young person with a very high score, but most young people don't have that high of a score, because that high of a score comes as you build credit.
Okay.
You know, so it will come down to, and that's why I'm saying you need a professional mortgage consultant. You need somebody who's going to take the time and run it both ways to say, look, with your credit score, sometimes, Peter, even with 20% down, somebody is better off to go with a government loan and paying the government mortgage insurance, because the hit on their credit score is so high. So you have to compare that. You have to compare payments. You have to look at tax deductibility, and go from there.
If today's rates are, slightly under 5, let's say, for a 30-year fixed, is that based upon the best credit or the worst?
That's a bit of the middle of the road.
Okay, I could actually do better if my credit's better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Interest rates right now are kind of hovering in the high 4s. If you are, let's say, 4.875, APR. If you are supposed, if you have a high credit score, you might get a 4.625 APR. So.
All right. So let's we've got a couple minutes here left. So let's say we've confused our listeners thoroughly.
Yes.
In terms of this whole
process.
That's
how we make money. No, I'm kidding.
but we've said a lot of it depends, in, not in those words, but we've said that. And to the extent that if I were listening to this, I'd probably say, well, where do I begin? And you would say that you'd begin with a mortgage consultation with someone who knows what they're doing. So how does someone enter that world?
Very simply, they go online to our website and apply, or they call 716-633-3700. You speak with one of the mortgage consultants. It probably takes 45 minutes to an hour. They'll take your application. They will go through the pluses, the minuses. And for no cost, no obligation, no anything, we will actually give you a mortgage commitment.
And the only thing that's needed is the piece of real estate that they want to buy.
The piece of real estate, and then the appraisal will follow.
Right.
So, you know, that's the only real caveat. And of course, that your circumstances don't change. I mean, if we give you a pre-approval and unfortunately the next day you lose your job, you know, that would be the only difference. And we actually have had people that have lost jobs the day of closing, the day before closing. That's not fun.
No, it isn't fun. It's not fun for anybody. So if that's how I begin the process, how long does the process take? I had a very interesting conversation yesterday with Richard Smith, who was former CEO, president, chairman of the board of Realogy Corporation, just to talk about the world of real estate. And he believes that the real disruptive influence in the industry going forward will be that influence that can actually compress the time to get the deal done fast. And as I said to him, at our mortgage company, we can close a loan very quickly.
Yes.
The problem is on the title side and the closing side.
Yes, and, without a doubt.
And so how long should it take normally from your perspective in the mortgage business?
Well, it shouldn't take more than 2 weeks to gather all the documents together. And you know,
that's the hard part, getting all the documentation.
Without a doubt. Now, if you go online and you do it, and you are working for a major corporation, it can be done extremely quickly. And without you, as I said, lifting a finger. Now, you have to be a person who trusts websites and technology, and we still have a good chunk of the population that doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a little neutral on that. I kind of get that. You know, 2 weeks and we should be able to get an approval. 30 days and you should be able to close. Now, other things run into that. You know,
lots of things, but because there's more and more people involved in that process, the appraisal, right, et cetera. We've just got 40 seconds or so left in the show. Linda, how would our listeners learn more about you and what the mortgage process is all about? What's the fastest way?
Fastest way is to call the office at 716-633-3700 or visit our website at huntmortgage.com.
And the idea is to get ready for purchase or refinance long in advance, well in advance of when you actually need it.
It's critical, Peter, because of the highly competitive nature of the business. If you go in and there are seven other offers and you have a commitment in hand, your offer is going to be stronger without any question.
It's effectively cash. Linda Malia, president of Hunt Mortgage, thank you for being with us this morning. I'd like to thank our listeners for being with us. We'll be back next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, Western New York and all of upstate is Hunt Country.